I think sometimes we get so caught up in the minutiae of the daily grind that we forget how fun this is. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately. I think we just need to pass that along more to the early career educators. This is fun. Don't forget that this is fun and get all caught up in the parts of it that's not fun.
Hello and welcome to School Me, a podcast from the National Education Association. On this show, we talk to seasoned educators and experts to give new educators the tools they need to thrive in their careers. I'm your host, Natika Samuels. Sometimes the passion for education runs in the family. That was certainly the case for Lori Stratton, an English teacher entering her 29th year of teaching in Kansas as her son enters his first year in the classroom. She has a lot of wisdom to pass along, and so we're really excited to hear what she has to share. Welcome to School Me, Lori.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me today. Let's start off with just a little bit about you, your career history, and why you decided to become a teacher.
Well, I'm a high school English teacher, and I'm about ready to start my 29th year of teaching. I've spent my whole career in Kansas. I started out in a school where my husband was working in the city, and we stayed there 2 years. And then I moved to another smaller rural school, and I stayed there for 24 years, always in high school. And I'm now in a more urban, suburban type school. It's a larger school, and I've been there for 3 years. I didn't want to be a teacher for a really long time. My parents were both teachers, and I always appreciated my parents, but I wanted to do something different, something that was not teaching. So I went to school to become a journalist and got a journalism degree. And by the time I graduated from college, I knew that it wasn't for me. I still remember I was working for a newspaper, and I remember the moment I got sent to a high school to cover a story. The education reporter was sick, and I walked in, and you have that smell, that's that high school smell, you know, that smell of locker room and school lunch and that kind of smell. And I thought, this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm not supposed to be a newspaper reporter. I had to go back to school to become a teacher. But I think when I first started thinking about it, I wanted to do something different than what my parents were doing. So I kind of avoided it, but I haven't ever regretted becoming a teacher. It's been a great life.
It's interesting. I hear that story a lot, that someone grew up in a household full of teachers and for that reason didn't want to do it and then just somehow made their way over there. And it's interesting because you have a son who's also going to become a teacher soon.
Right. And I'm so excited for him. And he also is a second career teacher. When he graduated from high school, his goal was to be a fireman, which he did become an EMT and a fireman and did that for a few years. And then, like I did, he went back to school to become a teacher, and he's going to be teaching fourth grade. He just graduated from college in May, and he's going to be teaching fourth grade in an inner city school. So he's going to be in a high poverty district.
So a pretty different experience from you.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot different, not just the fact that he's elementary and I'm secondary, but also the economics of his district will be different and the needs of his students, but he's very excited about it.
So did you encourage your son to go into education or discourage him or?
What's sad for me is a lot of parents who are teachers sometimes do discourage their children. I've seen that. I don't know how frequent it is, but I have seen that before. I did not discourage him. I've always let that just be whatever my own children want to do. He's always had a heart for children. I'm excited for him because I think it will meet a lot of his strengths. I wish it was easier in that I wish that it paid better. I mean, I think a lot of the stress that comes along with teaching, you know, that's okay to a certain degree because that's the contract we make with society. But I don't think that he should have to struggle financially on top of that. He is getting some of his student loans paid or forgiven because he's teaching in a high poverty school. I feel like there should be maybe more programs like that. I wish that there were some more that could help him. It's hard for beginning teachers if they have school loans to try to make it on their salaries.
Yeah, so this podcast is always about getting new educators in a good place so that they can survive the first 5 years or so of their career. And so you have such an interesting point of view because you're seeing it from being an educator and sort of raising one or being behind the scenes as someone becomes one. And so I think you see a lot of things that some of our guests haven't talked about. How do you think he knew he wanted to do this for his career, his second career?
Well, I think he probably was a little bit like me in that he was going to differentiate himself from his parents. I also think that he sees some of the advantages being a teacher, you have a very rich life. You know, what you do matters. It's also a pretty good career for including a family. You do have some of the same breaks from school that your children do when they go to school. I think he is an idealistic kind of person, and he wants to make a difference. He doesn't just want to do something to make money. But I'm not surprised that he went into elementary education. I think that's a good fit for him.
So what are some of the pitfalls that you've warned him about?
You know, I've talked to him about not expecting to be perfect. There's a lot of pressure on new teachers and on all teachers. I think just showing up every day and trying really hard is good enough. I think that you could spend pretty much all of your time preparing for class and all of your time preparing lessons, but then you're going to burn out. So I've talked to him about, you know, you have to try to maintain a balance with the rest of your life, and don't expect to be perfect, but just try every day and to show up with your heart, and you'll be fine. I've also talked to him a lot about how the most important thing is to build the relationships with the students and to build the classroom community. And then if you get that established at the beginning, then the rest of the year goes a lot more smoothly and the curriculum will get taught. But I think sometimes new teachers feel like, oh, I have to get to the curriculum immediately or I'm going to be behind. And they don't always front load with all that relationship building that they really need to do in order to make the rest of the year go much more smoothly.
And how about relationships in the building? Mm-hmm. Just because you and the students aren't the only people that you're dealing with in a day. What are your pieces of advice or your little tips for making a more harmonious work day or school year?
And I think colleagues can make or break situations. I really do think they can. I think it's good to try to find mentors. You know, most schools probably have a formal mentoring program, or a lot of schools do. That can be helpful depending upon how it's set up. Sometimes it's not as helpful. You can sometimes find mentoring programs through NEA. Locals have those, or state organizations have those. But I think teachers can also find their own mentors to a certain degree too. They can find somebody else in their department or at their grade level or in their building that they really can learn a lot from and ask questions. And trying to find people who are positive, because, you know, unfortunately in some schools, you can find the people who are a little bit burned out and, you know, may not be the kind of people you really want to associate with, as unless you have to. So try to find the positive, experienced people who really still love the job and want to help new teachers. Administrators, you know, you try to maintain a respectful relationship with the administrator as much as possible. And also try to understand administrators have their own separate stressors that we maybe don't see as teachers. Just some basic communication skills and understanding what other people are going through.
So let's get into that. How do new educators step into the classroom, you know, their first day or mm-hmm. maybe the first day of their second year, you know, mm-hmm. getting that second chance? How do they do it right this time? How do they build that classroom community first?
Well, I work a lot also with teachers on classroom management. That's one of the things that I present on in my state. And that's what I tell them, is that first day and the first week are critical. Now, if you blow it, you can always restart, and you can. But if you can set it up the first day and the first week, I think a lot of times teachers worry a lot about what their classrooms look like and if all the decorations are up and those kinds of things. And really what they need to be worrying about is, how am I going to establish my classroom community? And I don't think there's any one way to do that. I think that it has to be based on the personality of the teacher. So what my son will do and what will work for him will be totally different than what I do, partially because of age and partially because of personality. But I've talked to him a lot about establishing credibility, telling them a little bit about you. Show them a picture of your daughter. They'll love that. You know, their pets, those kinds of things. And also kind of speaking your values into the classroom throughout the entire year. So, you know, things like, in my classroom, we're going to respect each other. And you just constantly are repeating that over and over and over. So part of it could be playing some get-to-know-you games and those kinds of things, but it doesn't have to be. It has to be really based on affirming over and over again what you value and what's important in this classroom, and trying to maintain that as the most important thing.
So how do you run your classrooms? What do you do to build the community in your classroom?
I'm really honest with my students. It's kind of like what you see is what you get. I try to be really authentic. So what I'm like when I'm talking to them is how I really am. I'm not trying to fool them or, you know, manipulate them or anything like that. I keep my rules really simple because I think a lot of us teachers get involved in so many complicated rules that it's almost impossible to follow them all. So in my classroom, you're polite, you're prepared, and you're participating. Those are my only rules.
The three P's.
Yeah, the three P's. Those are the only rules. You know, we talk about what being polite means to yourself. And I also try to speak my values into the room a lot. Like, you know, in this classroom, we are going to respect each other. In this classroom, we are not going to put each other's down in this classroom. You know, those kinds of things. And I tell them, if you catch me not following those values, I need to know. Same thing. And it seems to be working pretty well. I also feel like the first few activities that you do with the students, those can be pretty powerful. You can do something that relates to the curriculum, but also something that builds community.
So classroom management comes up a lot mm-hmm. in terms of what teachers want more advice for and tips
yes.
for, but we've also heard a lot of people say, I don't like the term classroom management because it feels like slightly dehumanizing to the kids. What's your sort of take on classroom management?
I really think it's a perception on the part of the teacher. And this is what I talk to student teachers about and young teachers. It's like, do you feel like your class is under control? It doesn't need to be perfectly quiet. So it can be different things for different people. Like if your students are really engaged in what they're doing, it's liable to be kind of noisy in your classroom because they're going to be excited and they're going to be blurting and they might be moving around, and that's fine. I mean, I don't think it needs to be very quiet and what you traditionally might think of as a well-managed classroom. So that to me, I think, is sometimes a big relief for some young teachers or early career educators, because I think that traditionally we think of a well-managed classroom as students are just sitting there quietly and working with a paper and pencil or on technology or something. But I like to think of students, the difference between being engaged and being compliant. Like students can be compliant and they can be doing what you're saying, but that doesn't mean they're engaged. So I really do think how well a classroom is managed is based on the perception of if a teacher feels like he or she's in control and that the students are engaged, then the classroom is well managed.
So what are some of the pieces of advice about classroom management that maybe you've given your son or just any of the student teachers that you work with?
The main thing is to plan. I mean, you're not going to have enough time to do all the teacher tasks you have to do during the school day. Make sure that you're ready for the next day. I still do that after all these years because those kids are coming in regardless. The students are coming in and they're going to be there. So you have to make sure that you have activities for them and plans for what you're going to do. And if that means that your assessment and your grading doesn't get done right away, then it doesn't get done right away. Or if your bulletin boards don't get made, the main thing is you know what you're going to do with the students and overplan. I think in general, new career educators need to overplan a little bit more because they go through things more quickly than they will later on. They haven't necessarily learned how to stretch things. I think planning is the first thing. Make sure that you have your plans completely in a row. The students really, if they know that what you are doing, why you're doing it, and why they're learning it, and they see purpose in it, I think they're way more likely to go along with it and get excited about it. I think that they want to know why. I mean, if you're asking me to do this, why? Why do I need to do this? If a teacher can really think through the reasoning and express that to the students, I think that helps also with classroom management because the students are willing to buy in and say, okay, I can see how this will benefit me. And it needs to be something more than just, it's going to be on the test. You know, that's not motivating to 3/4 of the students. It just isn't. So they need to really know, why do I need to learn how to read better? Why do I need to know that? And I think that's good for teachers too, because that makes a teacher be really reflective about the choices that they're making in class. My order of things to do for new teachers is plan, to make sure you have your plans down, then do anything the office asks you to do, so then you don't get a bunch of emails from them. And then you can do the other things like assessments and etc.
Do you think that there's any like seed that you can plant in the beginning of your career that leads to becoming a more experienced but still positive teacher in the end?
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is a really fun job. And I think sometimes we forget that because it's so stressful, you know, and if we just focus on, oh, I still haven't done that. Oh, I have 60 essays to grade. Oh, I'm not sure they're going to be ready for the test. If we just focus on the negative parts of it, we forget how fun it is. If you want to survive long term and thrive long term, remember that this is a lot of fun. You know, students are funny. They like to joke. They like to have a good time. They like to make their teachers smile. We can just be silly once in a while. And I get to go to pep rallies, and that's part of my job. When our school goes to state in a sporting event, they march the team through the building with a band playing. If I was working in an office, I wouldn't get to see that. I think sometimes we get so caught up in the minutiae of the daily grind that we forget how fun this is. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately. I think we just need to pass that along more to the early career educators. This is fun. Don't forget that this is fun and get all caught up in the parts of it that's not fun.
So what that has me thinking about is sort of what are the qualities of a good teacher in terms of how do you know whether teaching is the right choice for you? I mean, everybody's going to have their own reasons, their own inspiration, but do you think that there are a couple of core qualities or personality traits or motivations that lead you to believe that someone might be making a really good choice or bad choice in going into education?
I do think people can learn to be strong teachers if they're motivated to do that. I mean, I think some people are natural teachers. I really do. Their personalities just align with that. But I also think that people who really want to be can be too. I think you need to be idealistic to a certain degree. I think you need to believe that things will get better and that with work and with effort that situations, whatever they are, whether they're social situations or learning situations, will get better. And I think they need to be able to feel like they have an agency of control over the future. They need to like people. If you don't like people, maybe you should do a different job. They need to be somewhat social to a certain degree, although I've had some really good colleagues that have been very reserved, but yet are just awesome teachers. So I don't think there's one formula except for the fact that you need to tend to be a little idealistic, upbeat, I think.
Thanks for listening to School Me, and a quick thank you to all of the NEA members listening. If you're not an NEA member yet, visit nea.org/whyjoin to learn more about member benefits. Right now you're working in more of a wealthy suburban district, but you spent the majority of your career working in a rural area. Yes. Can you talk to me a little bit about the differences between those? And then now your son is going to be working in more of an inner city. Higher poverty area. Mm-hmm. And what do you think are some of the differences in what it's like to be a new teacher or be a teacher, period, in each of those different areas?
I think access to resources is probably the biggest difference that I see. I think, you know, teachers probably, regardless of where they work, have to probably pay some of the money out of pocket to get the resources they want for their students. But I think some districts or buildings or cities have more resources than others. And I think the fact that those aren't equitable, it would be one of the most difficult things. One of the things, I used to work for 24 years at a high school that ran around 450 students in four grade levels. And another difference that I see between that and the high school I'm at now, which has about 1,800 students in four grade levels, is that I knew the students' families more. Because I would have generations of students, I'd have brothers and sisters and relatives. I knew the community more. I don't have that as much in the district that I'm in now because there's so many students. I don't necessarily have brothers and sisters and know the community. And that can be a strength or a weakness. It just kind of depends. What I have noticed, though, about across the state when I've gotten to do some traveling and visiting other schools is students are students. I like to say when people ask me about it, a 16-year-old is a 16-year-old pretty much no matter where they live or what they look like. They're 16 and there's certain factors that come along with being 16 that are kind of universal. There's certain needs that all students have. You know, they need to be liked and they need to belong and they need to feel safe. And I think those are the same in every type of school. that we need to provide. It's just that how we provide that might look different according to the resources we have and the populations that we're working with. I don't think there's anything at all equitable about the fact that some buildings and students have access to more resources than others. That's not fair at all. I wish we could solve that.
So speaking of equity, when a new educator is going into a school mm-hmm. and they know that there's going to be an issue of resources, how can they prepare themselves for that? I mean, obviously, we wish that teachers didn't have to pay right. their own money to get mm-hmm. supplies. You know, you don't ask doctors to buy their own right. supplies either. That aside, what do you think people can do to prepare themselves? Just like your son is probably going to have to prepare right. himself for a situation where he knows that his students aren't getting what he thinks they deserve.
I'm not sure I have the answer to that. I think he's got a lot of benefit in that, you know, both his father and I are educators, and he's got a really strong, young, kind of new to the administrative principal who's really excited about building a strong staff. I think one of the things that anybody going into those kinds of schools can think about is seeing the challenges that might be there as strengths instead of as problems to solve. I think looking at some of the things that are challenges as strengths and how can you build on those strengths as opposed to problems to be solved might be just a mind shift, a mindset shift that people could make.
What's on the horizon for like the next generation of teachers?
I've been really lucky to work with a bunch of student teachers, and some of them have been traditional students and some of them have been non-traditional, you know, adults that have had other careers and come back. I think they all want to do a nice job, and I think they all care about people and they all want to work hard. I think in general, a lot of times, and this was probably how it was for me too, the amount of work required is a little shocking for them. So I think that maybe the schools of education, I think the more they can get education students out into the classroom earlier, the better. I think that's important. I do think a lot of traditional students in this generation who are going into education, they want a better life balance. So it's not just about money for them. They also want to be able to have a better life balance. They don't want to have to give up everything in their lives just to be a teacher, and I think that's admirable. I mean, I think that will make them better teachers because they will have more to give the students if they have a life outside of the classroom. They're very smart, very tech savvy. They know a lot. I do think there's probably some weaknesses in terms of how to just deal with, you know, 30 people in a classroom. How do you actually deal with that? Maybe some of the other problems would be things like, how do I deal with students who come traumatized or students who maybe have various disabilities? You know, how do you just make it all work? Some time management stuff, those kinds of things.
So you mentioned life balance, mm-hmm. and along with that comes a lot of self-care. Mm-hmm. How have you been advising your earlier career educators or student teachers or your son and how to take care of themselves in this profession?
They just really need to prioritize what's really important and what really can slide. And they have to be the ones to decide that. But, you know, like I said, the students are coming in. You have to have substantive things for them to do. You have to know why you're doing those things. It has to move them forward towards the goals. For the learning objectives, that's the most important thing. Some other things can slide. Maybe your handouts don't have to be super pretty. Maybe you don't have to change your bulletin board every 2 weeks. You really need to figure out what's most important so you can do self-care. Because I know a lot of teachers I know, and experienced and newer teachers both, if they have something that they know has to be done by Monday morning, they don't really enjoy their weekend. You know, so they really need to become very efficient at using their time and spend it on what really needs to be done and let other things go.
Time management tips?
Everybody has to kind of find what works for them, but what works for me is, you know, lists and prioritizing. And like I said, I know what I'm going to do. When my plan time comes, it's never long enough. I'm going to make sure I'm ready for tomorrow, first of all. I'm going to do whatever the office needs me to do in terms of forms or whatever, answer emails and deal with parent communication. Then I'm going to do the extra stuff, whether that be grading or filing or whatever. You know, you have to figure it out, and that probably depends upon grade level too. And I think if we're all the time working and never doing anything else or seeing things that are new, we lose our creativity a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of like how you get your best ideas in the shower.
Right, exactly. I mean, if you're thinking about it all the time, you're not going to get the ideas. But if you're like living life, that's when you say, oh, this would be really cool to bring into my classroom.
And so you're pretty active with NEA and your local association. How has that been modeled for, you know, your entire family? Your husband also is in education, and now your son's going into it. And how does that work into your ethos and what you're passing along?
Well, I've had so many opportunities through National Education Association. I get to be one of the trustees and trainers for Leaders for Just Schools, which has been awesome. But both of my parents were teachers, and both of my parents were involved in their local teachers union organization. And I first became a member because my dad actually had health problems and was forced to take an early retirement in the middle of a school year. And his local helped him negotiate his retirement. So first it was just a pragmatic thing that, oh, I need to do this for, you know, protection, the legal side of it, those kinds of things. But the more I got involved, the more there was so many opportunities for leadership. And for teachers who do want to become career teachers and not go into other areas of education, it provides a lot of leadership areas and a lot of growth so they can take on leadership responsibilities. For a long time, I felt that it was kind of all about teacher negotiation and those kinds of things, which is a really important part. But there's so much more. And one thing I hate to see is a lot of early career educators don't believe they have the money to be able to belong to the organization. But there are so many ways to get that money back through different opportunities, not to mention just all the, you know, savings on car insurance and those kinds of opportunities that come along. But there's, you know, all the leadership opportunities, and now there's all kinds of micro credentials that people can get that can, in our state, in Kansas, they can earn college credit for their micro credentials. So there's so much support that I think that it's really important for people to grow as a professional to join NEA and their local.
So what's your favorite thing about teaching? What's kept you there for nearly 30 years?
Right, and I thought about this a lot because I know I didn't ever want to go into administration. It is fun. You know, I think we get so caught up in how hard it is, like I said earlier, that we forget that it's fun. But I really enjoy being around 16, 17, and 18-year-olds. They can be a little jaded from time to time, but they still have a hunger for learning. Sometimes you have to dig a little bit to find that. And if they find something like a book that they love, oh, that's just like the best thing ever. Or a poem, or they write something they feel proud of. That's just, I mean, there's no way that anything else in the world could ever compare to that feeling as when a student. And the bottom line is, I love to read and write too. And I get to spend my days sharing things that I love, reading and writing, with young people. That's really cool. And I get paid for it. I don't get paid enough for it, but I get paid to do that. That's really cool. Not a lot of people get to do the things that they love the most and get paid for it.
Right, so one question I like to ask everyone is, if you could give any advice to your younger educator self, what would it be?
To not worry so much and to really allow yourself to enjoy the fun parts. One time a teacher told me, you know what, the end of the year is going to come. It will end, whether these things get done or whether they don't, it will end, and then next year will start. It just kind of put things in perspective, like, you know, you don't need to worry about any one particular day and how it goes. I would say just don't worry as much and enjoy yourself more.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Lori.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of School Me. And if you find this podcast helpful, be sure to rate and review the show. It helps more people find us and the advice they need to survive their first few years in education. For even more tips and resources, you can visit us at neatoday.org/school-me.